ॐ सहनाभवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावतीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः.
Well, chapter 7, verse 28.
Ajnana vritti vikshepa, dvivida jnana trittiyah, dvivida jnana trittiyah, shoka pagama ityete, shoka pagama ityete. Yojaniyas Chiratmani.
Cindy. Ajnana Avritti Vikshepa Dvivida Jnana. Dvivida is a word, but Dvivida Jnana. Jnanam, so Jnana. Trityaha. Shoka apagama, bishoka apagamaha, yeti, ete yojani yaha chiratmani. Okay. Ajnanam, ignorance. Avrati is just a list here. Okay, so I'll go with this. Ajnanam is ignorance. Avrati is avaranam. It's that which covers. Vikshepa is the projection. So, for instance, if you have ignorance of the rope form, then that rope form becomes avara. That's the ajnanam. There's ignorance of the ropeness of the rope form. That's the ajnana. The avriti is, therefore, that ropeness becomes covered. And being covered, there's a vikshepa, a projection that allows you to take it as a snake. So you have the ignorance, the avarana, the covering, or screening, as one of your translations says, it's covering, we usually the word that we use, avarana, and vikshepa is the projection. And then, dvivida jnanam, the twofold knowledge, paroksha jnanam and aparoksha jnanam. Jnanam is knowledge, paroksha is indirect knowledge, and aparoksha is direct immediate knowledge. So there's direct knowledge, and there's indirect knowledge, and indirect. Dvivida means twofold. So the twofold jnana, the twofold knowledge, direct knowledge is aparoksha, indirect is paroksha jnanam. Then triptiyaha, then tripti. So here we have what's called a dvandva compound. There's just a list ending in the plural. So trippi, like harihi, hari, hariyaha, nominative plural. Here's tripti, triptiyaha. So that's nominative plural. Trippi means satisfaction, the ananda, the wholeness, the fullness that a jivan mukta, a liberated person, would enjoy. So the tripti. Then shoka apagamaha. Shoka is sorrow. Apagama means the removal of sorrow. So this satisfaction and removal of sorrow, then he says iti, all of these, yojaniyaha, all of these have to be applied to the chiratma, to the self. Why does it say this? Remember in the last five or six verses, Vidyaranya told the tenth man story and applied all of these to the tenth man story. Just quickly, for some of you who weren't here last week, I'll just say it very quickly what that story is. Not that some of you haven't heard it 1,000 times. So I'll just do it in a brief little synopsis, okay? Ten boys are on a scouting trip, on a trip through the forest in India. Okay? There's one leader. They come to a river, and they decide we're going to cross that river so we can see what's on the other side. So they make their way across the river that's quite rapid, a lot of rapids, a little deeper than they'd expected, but they get over to the other side. And the leader of the group of ten says, all right, everybody line up so that I make sure that you're all there. And so he counts 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Oh, where's the tenth man? right? And you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Where is the tenth man? And they, all of the boys start looking around, well, where is he? And then they start becoming very concerned and think, well, maybe he's drowned in the river. And so they're running around looking all over for him, and one man, old man, old sadhu, Swamiji would tell the story, is sitting on the banks of the river and sees all this consternation, and he walks up to the leader and he said, what is wrong? We see you, so I see you're so upset, what is wrong? And the leader says, there were 10 of us, one has drowned in the river. Okay. We think. We're afraid. We can't find the tenth man. And so the old sadhu looks at the boys and at the leader and he says, I know where the tenth man is. I will show you the tenth man. Okay. And the leader says, where is he? See, he felt a lot of relief. All the boys felt a lot of relief. It was great relief. But where is he? Right. Where is he? And then the leader said, and the old man said, let me see you count again. So the leader, a little confused and a little bit disappointed because he'd already counted many times, agreed and counted 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And the old sadhu said, 10. You're the 10th man. And the boy who was the leader, felt ridiculous, but felt so much relief because now he had knowledge of the 10th man and he was no longer suffering from the 10th man that had drowned in the river. So you can imagine how lengthy this story could be, how embellished. But I gave you the short version. Okay. So now, that's what we went through. This story was actually told with some detail by Vidyaranya. Bringing in all of these factors, every one of these factors in light of the 10th man story, because there was the Ajnanam there, right? The Ajnanam was, because the boy had counted the 9, he became, as Vidyaranya says, he became stuck on the 9th boy. His mind became stuck. It never went to himself at all. And so that's the Ajnanam. So the general Ajnanam, he's erased himself from this, there's only these 9. That's the ignorance. Then the Avarna is, after that ignorance is there, he just sees there's no there, you know, that he's counted the 9. That brings out the Avarna that the 10th man is missing. There is no 10th man. Right? The 10th man is not here. That's the ignorance, right? That's the avarana. It's the general ignorance, and now that, what does that mean? That the tenth man himself is covered. That's the avarana. Then what happens, as Vidyaranya says, oh my gosh, you know, the tenth man is drowned in the river. He's dead. He's been killed. Okay, that's the vikshepa. That's the projection that comes. Then the wise old man comes, or this trustworthy person, is how he deals with the Aptavachana. The one who has the Aptavachana is the person whose speech is trustworthy. That person comes and says, don't worry, the tenth man is there. That's paroksha jnanam, right? That's the paroksha jnanam, the indirect knowledge. And that has a certain result. The tenth man is there. They say, okay, good, great, where is it? Okay. Then what happens is the teacher, this Aptapurusha, the one who is the trustworthy person, now gives him a paroksha jnanam through vichara, through analysis. The analysis is demonstrated here by the counting out of the other 9. Once he counts out of the other 9, he's eliminated all possibilities. There are the 9 are there. Right? So it's not going to be this, it's not going to be this, it's not going to be this. This is our teaching methodology. Not going to be this, 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 neti, 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 not this, not this, not this, not this, that. Right? You are the tenth man. That's the aparoksha jnanam. Because the tenth man is very much there as myself. Right? But that avarna, that covering has been there, so I don't see it. But once I've eliminated all the not this, not this, not this, because I am still remaining, then when there's a direct, you know, assertion, you are that, tatvamasi, you are that, then the tenth man sees definitely, I am that. Once that is seen, there's the tripti, the satisfaction, thank goodness, ha, and the shoka apagama. Shoka apagama means the sorrow is eliminated, it's erased. All of the sorrow was all just nothing but projection, really. The tenth man is drowned, I'm going to be blamed for it. How are we going to tell the parents this is the worst thing that could have ever happened in my life? My whole life is ruined, let alone the dead boy's life. My life is ruined. On and on and on and on. That's the shoka. And so that shoka also is completely eliminated, plus the tripti, the satisfaction of, ah, all is well. It's like waking up from a bad dream, right? And so he went into detail talking about all of these different stages in reference to the called avastas, states of experience, in reference to this tenth man. Now he says each one of these has to be applied to you, to the situation here, to the chit atma, the self which is chit, your being which is actually just pure consciousness. So to the self that you are now, we have to look at everything that we've just applied to the tenth man, we now have to look at it in reference to you. So he says, ete these, yojaniyaha, ete is in the nominative plural, these yojaniyaha, these must be applied, chitatmani, in reference to the atma, which is chit, which is consciousness. Okay? So now that's what he's going to do. So let's do verse 27. 29, I mean.
Samsara-sakti-chitta-sam-sara-sakti-chitta-ha. Svatattvam naiva vetyayam.
Sandhi. Samsara asakta chittaha. San. See that anuswara and shakara there? That's the sandhi. San chit. San. Sam's chit is san. Chit abhasaha is chit abhasaha. Kadachana. Swayam. Prakasha, kutastam, svatattvam, na eva, veti, ayam. Okay. So it says, at the end of the second sentence, a sentence line, ayam, this person, right, this one, who are we talking about? Remember, in the very first verse, we're talking that we spent all of those initial verses defining the Purusha. The Purusha is the Chirabhasa. Purusha means person. The person is the Chirabhasa, the one that takes itself to be the conscious being. So it's really the self plus the mind who is then identified with the two bodies, the subtle body and the physical body, because of that ahankara, the I notion, that says, I am this. So it creates a Chirabhasa as though a reflection of consciousness, where your own conscious being that you are is identified with your body and identified with your mind and your sense organs. Even though these are objects of knowledge, you don't recognize yourself as that stable, constant being that is present to your body and your sense organs and your mind and the world. You have identified yourself, taken yourself to be one with those. That's what we call the chitta-bhasa. So here, sometimes it's just easily translated as reflection of consciousness, but you have to know what that means. It can be misleading. So here this chitta-bhasa means the jiva, means this transmigrating entity here. This chitta-bhasa, who is samsara-sakta-chittaha, whose mind is totally engaged. Asakta means you're totally attached, actually, to samsara. It means the chitta-bhasa, that person whose mind is just totally involved within the dream. It's like if you're a dream character within the dream, all your mind is involved in is whatever is within the dream, whatever is within the box. Just think about it. Say if there's no knowledge, the Atma, the self, has not been differentiated at all. So the mind is not going to be appreciating that. That self is only is totally 100% identified with the creation, either in terms of the isness, the being of the creation, or the consciousness of this body, the consciousness of the sense organs, the consciousness of the mind, you know, the existence of the creation. All of this is what the jiva is experiencing. It experiences consciousness and existence only only as one with the experiences of name and form that you have just living in this creation. So the mind is totally committed, totally involved in samsara. Right? So I really want you to see how total this is. What do I think about? Where does my mind hang out as a mind? What do I do with my mind? Where does it abide? Where does it rest? It rests totally in samsara. It's either resting, it's through perception, it's having experiences of the world, it's experiencing my mind in my body, it's focused on my mind, the thoughts in my mind, my moods, my emotions, my perceptions, the health of my body, the relationships I'm having in the world, whatever I'm perceiving. That's where my mind is located. And if I look for a place for the mind to rest, it could be listening to music or turning on the TV or going for a walk in nature or being with my friend, whatever it may be. Even then, I'm finding a resting place for the mind. Where? Only in samsara. Only in this world, in this world of duality. That's the only place where the mind has to rest. So how he says that here is this. The chitta-bhasa means this purusha, the jiva, this individual, whose mind is totally committed, totally engaged in samsara. Being totally engaged in samsara, then what? Kadachana, naiva kanat kadachana. Never at any time does that one know. Never at any time does that person know what? Swam tattvam, the truth of myself. Swam tattvam means the truth. The truth of my being, my own, the truth of myself. Never at any time does that person know who he or she is. Swayam prakasha kutastam. Never at any time does that person know the truth of myself as being the self-evident swayam prakasha, self-evident consciousness, which is kutastha, absolutely changeless, immutable, changeless. That being that I am, in the midst of my mind and my sense organs, all experience, that changeless substance, which is the truth of all of it, that me that is present, immutably present to all experience, that being is never and has never at any time been known. It's never been differentiated at any time. It is always only experienced as one with the changing objects of experience that I have. It's never experienced in its own right at any time. That is ajnanam. It's never experienced to the point of it not ever even being thought about that it's not experienced. Right? It's never thought about that it's not experienced. To really understand, like with the rope snake analogy, when you walk along and you see the snake there's a rope that's mistaken as a snake. There has never been a prior condition where you thought, oh, look, there's a rope and it's changed now into a snake. No, there is no rope. There is only a snake. That is pure ajnanam. Pure ajnanam. So here in this creation, there's just me experiencing this creation and I go around totally involved in the experience that I'm having. That's the pure, unadulterated ajnana. Okay? So never at any time, nekadachana. Then he says, we have to go on to the next one, which is the avarana, or the avritti.
Nabati nasti kutasta. Nabati nasti kutasta.
Actually, it's kutastaha. Let's do it again.
Nabati nasti kutastaha. Nabati nasti kutastaha. Iti bhakti prasangataha. Iti bhakti prasangataha. Karta bhokta hamasmiti. Karta bhokta ahamsmiti. Vikshepam patipadyate. Vikshepam patipadyate.
So, na bhati, na asti, kutastaha, iti bhakti, prasangataha, karta, bhokta, aham asmi, iti, vikshepam patipadyate. First part is avarana. Nabhati nasti kutastaha iti. Bhakti. This one says, the person says, who? This Chirabhasa. He says, there is no kutastha. This is how vidya, this is sometimes taught a little differently than this, but Vidyaranya teaches it in this way and it's fine. It's just a little different version, it's a little bit. Nabhati nasti kutastaha iti bhakti. Okay. The person says now, there is no kutastha atma. It's like saying, there is no self, there is no being, there is no existent being other than the one who's here. So na asti, it is not there. Nabhati, there's no presentation of it. We don't see it anywhere. So na asti, nabhati. This is what the person says. Then prasangataha, having said that, having said this, that will logically lead to another conclusion, which is the vikshepa. Okay, so prasangataha, this will lead to karta bhokta ahamasmi iti. That leads to, I am the karta, I am the doer, aham, ahamasmi, I am the doer. Right? This one who's doing everything, that's who I am. I am the bhokta, I am the enjoyer. Iti, this is the vikshepa. He gains this vikshepa. This is the projection that comes, having not recognized the self for what the self is. Then you take the self to be, you know, what's right in front of you, actually. Whatever your mind makes of that self, right? It's literally that. What does your mind make of that self, right? Well, I am seen to be the doer. Because look at the problem. It's a huge problem here, you know. If who you are is covered, right? In other words, covered not like covered with a lampshade or something, or covered with a bag. It's not that type of covering. It's the covering of ignorance. This is very important to understand, because sometimes when we say use the word avarana, we think of like an actual covering. It's not that. It's similar. Think about it with a rope snake. When we say covering, what we mean is that the ropeness, you experience the shape of the rope. The rope experience is there, but not the ropeness of it. The thisness of the rope is there. If you're walking along at dusk, and this thing is there, right? So the thisness of the rope is there, but not the ropeness of the rope. When that's the case, you're experiencing the thing there, but not what the thing is. And that's what allows for the vikshepa. That's what allows for the vikshepa. If there was just total ignorance there, there's not going to be any vikshepa, because there's nothing there to have a vikshepa of, a projection of. So now look here. You are here. Yourself is here. The self experience is very much here. As I am, I exist, me. When you say me, that one, right now, if you say me, I am, that one that you're referring to is the Atma. But it is this one, because its nature, the thisness of me is known, I am, right? But not what I am. That I am is known, but not what I am. That's not known. So the experience is there, the self-acknowledge is there in terms of the self-experience. But what this self-experience is not known. That is covered. The experience isn't covered, but what it is covered. That's the avarana. That's the covering aspect of ignorance. When that covering is there, then what do I do? What is my mind going to do? Well, it has to do something with it. And so it says, I am that. Because why? Well, because the mind itself is never away from me. Any thought that I have, I am there. Any emotion I have, I am there. So why shouldn't the mind, which doesn't know me in my own right, just say, I am that? Because the mind is never away from that. So until the vichara, until the analysis is there, to make that mind see that, wait a minute, what I'm taking to be the self, about myself, the mind talking to itself, what I'm taking to be me is actually something that's continually coming and going and coming and going and changing and changing. But the me doesn't change. I never go away. I never go anywhere. So there's a difference between me, the self, and this changing phenomena. That's what the mind has to be taught. But until it is taught, it takes itself to be the conscious being. I am the doer. I am the thinker. I am the feeler. I am the one who experiences. And then that mind doesn't stop there. It says, and I exist because this body exists. That's another level of superimposition. And therefore, I am finite and mortal because I know that this body dies because bodies die. All human beings are mortal. Therefore, I am immortal. Right? And so this is the superimposition, the adhyasa. That's what we call the vikshepa, right? And so that vikshepa causes this. The vikshepa is, I am the doer, I am the enjoyer. And so now with this vikshepa, we have the individual is born, right? The limited individual that is subject to birth and death and subject to happiness, joy and sorrow, pleasure and pain, all of the duality that exists within the creation, that becomes my reality. Right? That duality becomes my duality.
Right.
Yeah. So now, it's nice to have all the duality in birth and death, as long as it doesn't involve me. as long as I'm not affected by it, it's fine. Okay. But that's not the situation. Mm-hmm. Asti kutasya ityadau, asti kutasya ityadau, paroksham veti bhavitya, paroksham veti bhavitya, paschat kutasya evasmi, paschat kutasya evasmi, ityevam veti vicharataha. Ityevam veti vicharataha. And now, he says, this person who's become the karta bhokta, the doer and the enjoyer, this individual who's become this because of, not become this, who's always been this actually, because ajnana of ignorance doesn't have a beginning. There's not a prior condition to ignorance. You know, it's not like this person once had knowledge and knew I'm the kutastha atma, I'm the limitless, my being is limitless and changeless. And now I've become limited. No, there was no prior condition. Right? Because ignorance can't, knowledge removes ignorance. Right? Knowledge removes ignorance. Ignorance can't come back. It's like trying to get the snake back. So there's no prior condition for this jiva. And so because that ajnana is there, that ignorance is there, the avarna, the covering has always been there, and the vikshepa has always been there, as long as this jiva entity has been there. You see how that is? There's no beginning for it. And so now, this person gains some knowledge. What's the knowledge? Paroksha jnana. By the aptavachana, by the person who is a reliable source from that person, what happens? Asti kutastaha. This kutasta. Kutasta means the self that is changeless. The kutasta atma is. That self is. Iti adau. In the beginning, that's it. The self is, the atma is. Okay, so
Asti kutastaha iti adya paroksham veti vartaya. Initially, veti, he knows indirectly. Just like with the tenth man, the sadhu comes up and says, don't worry who the tenth man is. Your guru says, starts teaching, don't worry. Yourself is immutable. All is well. Don't worry. You say, really? So, but that's paroksha jnana because you don't have a clue what the teacher means. Right? Or what if the teacher comes up or somebody comes up and says, you know what? In the Vedas in India, there's an ancient teaching, a sacred teaching, and that teaching teaches that the truth of your nature is limitless awareness, is kutastha, is changeless, limitless awareness. This is what is taught in the Upanishads in India. And you say, really? I think I'm going to go to India. Let's go. Let's go. But there's no aparoksha jnanam. You've just been heard from a reliable source that such a knowledge exists in the Vedas, in the scriptural texts in India. And so they've told you, and you believe that there is such a teaching, but you don't have any details, and you don't know it yourself, but you know that there is a teaching that says that. That's paroksha jnanam. Somebody looks at you and says, you know, the truth of your being is that your being is limitless in the self of this whole universe. It's taught in the Vedas. Then you go. You say, that's very interesting. How can I learn about that? That's paroksha jnana, right? That's interesting. How would I learn about that? Is that true? How would I learn about that? Indirect knowledge, right? Even though I'm talking about you, it's still indirect knowledge. Because from your standpoint as a jiva, as an individual, that anyonya adyasa is so much that you're saying that to a mind that has no idea what you're talking about. From the standpoint of that mind, you are the mind is the conscious being. That's it. I'm the doer, I'm the karta. That's it. So that's the paroksha jnana. So he says, this is known indirectly, vartaya, just by a person telling you, mentioning it to you, giving you news of it. That's varta. Varta really means like news or mentioning a fact. Varta is mentioning a fact. So this person mentions the fact to you that the kutastha atma is, right? The limitless self is. So that's the aparoksha, just like the old sadhu saying to the tenth man, don't worry, the tenth man is. Then, but paschat, but after, later, then what? Kutastaha eva asmi. I am the kutastha. I am the kutastha. I am that self which is limitless. I alone, kutastaha eva asmi. I alone am that. Iti evam veti. In this manner that person knows, the person knows. How? Vicharataha, from vichara. Vichara means analysis. The analysis which is the teaching tradition. As you know, this teaching tradition, it doesn't just tell you, you are Brahman, be happy, go in peace. No. There's not, what will it do for you? There's so much analysis involved, but it's what we call the vichara, literally means analysis. It's more than just analysis. It's a teaching methodology that requires viveka. Means that your mind, the teaching has to take your mind step by step. First you see this, in this experience, for instance, this experience that we're having in this room, my body, all of our forms, speaking for each of us, my body, sitting in this room with my sense organs, with my mind, with myself. Everything we need is here. I am here, my body is here, my sense organs are here, my mind is here. This experience is here. Everything 100% that we need is here. Now the teacher has to just direct the mind, step by step of the student, to recognize what is the truth of this that is here. What is the truth of this experience? What is the reality of it? What is the reality of my being? That's the vichara. That vichara taha, that taha ending is that indeclinable ending that gives the fifth sense of the ablative. So from from vichara, from this analysis, which is the teaching methodology. So from this analysis, taking the student step by step by step, you recognize what? I am that. Remember in the Upanishad, the crux of the Upanishad, what we call the tatparya, the essence of what is being taught in the Upanishad, is the Mahavakya. Mahavakya means, can't really translate it, but it means literally great statement. But it means that what is to be understood is the Mahavakya in the Upanishad. It's the Tattvamasi, you are that. Right? What is you are that? Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. I am the Kutastha. Myself, my being is free. My being is changeless. My being is the very self of all beings. That this me that I am, this very me that is so intimately me, this me is the me of Ishwara. It's the me of the Lord. It's the me of every being. You know? It is the me of this universe. So the me, it's very, once you understand this, it's a beautiful thing because you know everybody. At their core, you know who they are because they're you. Their mind is doing this and that. All the minds work in the same way. You know, they go toward pleasure and away from pain. That's what they, you know. And we have all kinds of emotions around us. That's the structure of the mind. But the self that is me, the one who's having these emotions, having these experiences, this me is you. It's not like you. It's not that we're twins. It's that this self that I am is yourself. That there's only one self-experience, and that's the self-experience of Ishwara. That's the self-experience of the Lord. You know, so myself is the self of the Lord. That is the Mahavakya. This is recognized by all of the mystics in all religions of the world. They recognize. They try to wrap their theology around it, and often they'll just say, well, I know the theology doesn't say this, but this is the experience. That's what St. Teresa says. Theology doesn't want to say this, but how else can I say it? That this one abiding inside is the Lord. She says it. Meister Eckhart says, they all say, because they all know. They all know experientially. They don't have a teaching methodology to take them to that recognition. To where the teaching, often they don't. The teaching, in my experience, they don't. The teaching methodology takes you step by step by step to the recognition of your being as being immutable and changeless and not something which is contained, but in fact which is the truth of all things, of all beings. And so that's the vichara, that teaching methodology, that brings the student to the recognition not that that there is a kutastha atma, that there is a self that is limitless and pure and free and simple and whole and complete. Not that there is such a self, but that I am that self. It's a huge difference. When you say, there is such a self and I believe that, that's religious, right? That's a religious belief and it's comforting. It's a lot more comforting than saying, you know, I'm a sinner and there's nothing that can be done about that. At my core, because of original sin, I'm a defective person. That's also a religious belief. There's a theology around it, right? Still belief. If you say, and either one's a belief, you say, I'm a sinner, or you say, no, I don't believe that I'm a sinner. I believe that my being is sacred and whole and complete and that I am holy. I don't believe that I'm a sinner. Both are beliefs. One is a little happier than the other. One belief is a happier belief than the other belief, right? But they're still beliefs. Because you still say, then you might say something, and we'll see who's right when I die. We'll see what the truth is when I die. Right? That belief is not knowledge. Knowledge is when you can say, I am that. And you say it because you have the aparoksha jnanam. Aparoksha jnanam is a very important term in Vedanta. Pratyaksha, these are all means in Vedanta. All of these means of knowledge are studied so thoroughly. How do we know what we know? Paroksha, indirect knowledge, means my sense perception can't have a direct experience of it, but I've learned from others that it's so. Most of our knowledge is that, because we study through books, we watch TV and this and that, we get so, we build upon the indirect knowledge that's been handed down to us, you know, for centuries. We've built on this indirect knowledge. So much of our knowledge is that, and we get it from Optapurushas. Optapurushas mean people that we trust the veracity of what they say, so we accept it and we build upon it. So there's nothing, no way, no reason to slight indirect knowledge, but indirect knowledge in reference to yourself is a little odd. Why? Because I am here. I am here. So indirect knowledge for in reference to self-knowledge won't be enough. But the other problem is, I can't see myself through sense perception. That's another means of knowledge, through my sense perception, right? What can I see? I can only see things that exist within the creation that are objectifiable. I can't see through my sense perception the awareful being that illumines all of my sense organs that then illumine all my sense perceptions. Me. How can I see me? The one that lights up the mind and the sense organs. What's the means of knowledge for that? So, paroksha jnanam, indirect knowledge, is no good. And it's fine, but no good for knowing myself directly. Sense perception also. No good. Can't do it. It's very good for seeing sense objects. I'm not a sense object. My eyes are good for seeing form and color. My ears are good for hearing sound. My sense of touch is good for feeling. Right? My sense of smell is good for scent. My sense of taste is good for taste, for food. Right? So that's what these sense organs can give me. Can any of them give me knowledge of the conscious being that is illumining the mind and the sense organs? How? Not possible. And it doesn't. They don't. But they don't need to, because consciousness itself is self-evident. Consciousness, your me, the conscious being that you are, doesn't need sense organs. Because of its self-experience, it lights up the sense organs. It itself lights up the mind, lights up the sense organs, lights up the perceptions. So we say yourself is self-evident, and it is known how, not through protection, not through sense perception, not through indirect knowledge, but it is aparoksha. It is not indirect. It is self-shining. You don't need a means of knowledge to give you the self-experience of this stable being that you are. That is you. But, so your self-experience is there through its aparoksha, it's self-evident. But there's also a jnanam. From the standpoint of the mind, the me experience is self-evident. But because of ignorance in the mind, the self-experience that is self-evident is superimposed on the mind, and the mind is superimposed on it. That's why the mind, even though you see all of your thoughts, you experience all of your emotions, even the I am doing this, all of that is seen and experienced by you as an object, you still say, I am that. Even though all of those things come and go, you remain, I am that. That's the mind talking, because the mind doesn't know anything else. So you have to gain knowledge of that self, but really the knowledge is not the knowledge of the experience of the self. The self-experience is always already there. It's the removing the ignorance that caused the superimposition so that the self that you are is now recognized as it is. That's the aparoksha jnanam. You're not gaining the self-experience because the self-experience is already there. Look at the tenth man's situation. The tenth man doesn't gain a new experience of his body, or of his sense organs, or of his mind, or his being. That was already completely there. Right? He's just that boy standing there. He was the experience of the boy as a boy was completely there. But the experience of that boy being the tenth man was not there. Right? And it was that lack that caused him to suffer. So here, similarly, the stability of yourself, the fullness, the wholeness, the sanctity, the love of your own being is completely 100% here. But the focus of the mind, taking that for granted, is only it's lost in the samsara. It's lost in the world. And so creating hell, creating tension and stress and pain for itself. Because it's trying to get the stability of the self from the world. What happens, what keeps this great joke going, right, is that, in fact, whenever you fulfill a desire and you get your way for the moment, I really want this, I need this, oh please God, please let me have this, please let it work. It works. You fulfill your desire, what happens? Your mind, everything relaxes. You close your eyes and you just thank the Lord. And your mind just resolves into the ananda of yourself, not realizing. Not realizing. But because for that moment you're desireless. You're desireless. So the mind is just completely quiet and still. And it just can, for a moment, bask in that stillness until the next thought comes. Still the next thought, but this might not last. Or just somebody could take this away. Or I need this also. The whole maya starts up again. Right? But for the moment, the mind is just at peace. Yeah. But for jnani, for one who has this aparoksha jnanam, what has happened is that that superimposition has been broken. It's been broken. When it's been broken, now the mind has this home. It has the self for its home because the identity isn't there anymore. So the self that is its very being is the stable, whole being, right? That now the mind revels in, actually, rests in. So the mind is, in that way, freed. So it says, let's do this last verse. Karta bhokte karta bhokte chivam adi karta bhokte. That's hard. Bhokte chivam adi karta bhokte chivam. Just say something. Shokajata. Shokajatam pramuchati. Shokajatam pramuchati. Kritam kritjam prapaniyam. Kritam kritjam prapaniyam. Praptam mityevatushati. Praptam mityevatushati. He says, the karta bhokta iti evam adi. Oh, Sunday, okay. Karta bhokta iti evam adi shoka jatam pramuchati kritam krityam prapaniyam praptam iti eva tushati. He says, once this from vichara takes place from vichara, this knowing I am the kutastha atma, then what? Karta bhokta iti evam adi shoka jatam pramunchati. He is pramunchati, completely liberated. Pramunchati means liberated. Pramunchati means really completely liberated. All is well. Gives emphasis, pramunchati. Shoka jatam, from the whole jatam, whole collection, the whole host of shoka, of sorrows, beginning with karta bhokta, beginning with such things as I am the doer, I am the enjoyer, all of the ahankara that when you say, I am the doer, I am the enjoyer, then I become a small entity in this world, somebody who has to produce, right? What if I am the doer? Then myself becomes this jiva who is one person in the world who has to achieve and who has to enjoy. In other words, I have to do and I have to, and then I doing, I then have to enjoy the results of my actions. So often the jiva is referred to as karta bhokta, the doer and the enjoyer. You do, and when you do an action, you have to reap the results of that action in terms of punya and papa, in terms of pleasure and pain, things that give you happiness and things that give you pain. So this karta bhokta is kind of a circle, right, that defines what the jiva goes through. So this whole host of shoka, whole host of sorrows beginning with karta bhokta, the doer enjoyer. Okay? So being completely released from that, then what? Kritam, krityam. What is to be done has been done. Krityam, what is to be done, potential participle. Kritam, krityam. What is to be done, past passive participle, kritam, is done. What is to be done has been done. Then, prapaniyam, praptam. What is to be attained has been obtained. What is to be gained has been gained. What is to be done has been done. Iti eva tushati. Thus he's satisfied. It's very simple, you know. Satisfied means this being that you are is an already accomplished being, right? And this being is, in fact, all that I want to be. That's the fact of it. And the mind revels in that fact. The being that I am, the conscious me, this one that is right here, is more than enough. In fact, if you look at all of the sukha and dukkha, sukha means joy, happiness. There's a continuum. Pleasure, 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 more, 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 the most pleasure. Sorrow, 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 worse extremes. There's no end to those extremes. Right? So it's a continuum. Okay? You can say, what is the greatest sukha? The greatest sukha that could be experienced, because sukha means happiness. The greatest happiness that could be experienced in the world by this mind. Because think of it, in your lifetime, you've had many experiences of happiness and joy. And experiences of sorrow also. But you can remember, like if you remember, what is the most happy I've ever been? Or what is the most happy I could imagine being? Right? Would I rather have that experience of the greatest happiness I could imagine, or the experience which is my own being? Right? And there's no contest. There's no contest between the nature of myself and the greatest happiness in the world. The nature of myself is of a different order. It's a different order that doesn't compare with the sukha and dukkha that's available in the world, the pleasure and pain that's available in the world. That's why the person can say, you know, what is to be done has been done. What is to be accomplished has been accomplished. All is well with me. I am fine. Do you want some more happiness? No. Do you want anything? No.